good friends. Welcome. It is 4 p.m. Central Time, and you're listening to my voice on the great GCN Radio Network. And that means it's now time for INN World Report Radio. Welcome to the program, friends. My name is Tom Kiley, and I'll be your host for the next 1 hour right here. And we come to you 5 days a week now in this time slot from 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. Welcome. Welcome to the program. And first day of the week, and I hope it's well for you wherever you are. I understand we've got a big storm coming in from the Midwest. And as a matter of fact, I was just speaking with our guest who will be joining us in about 10 minutes or so, Carol Hardicky, and she's out in Kansas, and she says a big storm out that way, and it's heading this way. Carol will be joining us in a few minutes to talk about the POW/MIA issue, which affects her and her family. Her husband was shot down over Laos in 1965. And as Carol describes it, she was a very loyal and patriotic military wife and believed everything that the government had told her about her husband, and told her that he finally had been killed or permanently lost. And then she began to find out other information that there were still sightings, and the government was hiding a lot of information, which led her on a personal quest, and now she's become quite an activist. And she's going to join us to tell us about her experience in that regard and what does it mean for the other families in her situation. And hopefully maybe she has some knowledge that she can impart to the young, mostly wives, I would say, because there have not been too many female captives yet that I know of. But from the young people coming up now in the current conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. Anyhow, that's what is coming up in the program. Meanwhile, I'm going here in the first segment to open the phone lines, 866-582-9933. You're welcome to give me a call. I would really love to hear from you. And I'll send you out a book if you call. I've got a great book here from Wayne Madsen called Jaded Tasks, Brass Plates, Black Ops, Oil, and Big Oil, The Bloody Politics of the Previous Administration. But it looks like it's really continuing at a pretty full clip right along in this administration as well. So give me a ring. Tell me what you think. Hopefully you've been listening to the program. Call me up, and the first person gets a book. No questions asked. And you don't have to worry, because you can give your personal information to the producer, Matt, on the phone after we get done talking on the air. I promise I won't bite. It's quite easy, painless, and friendly. And it's great, friends, to get your feedback, because we bring you the program 5 days a week, and obviously we work pretty hard getting you interesting guests. We had a great guest on Friday, but he was supposed to join us today, but he couldn't make it at the last minute. Doug Guthrie, and he's an expert on China, and it's something that I feel very important is very important that we have to start educating ourselves. China went to sleep, basically, as far as the international scene is concerned, about 600 years ago or so, okay? And it is obviously waking up with a vengeance. They went into an isolationist phase in about 1420 and left the world to the Europeans, and the Europeans, we've seen what they've done with it. And now China is obviously waking back up again and getting back on the world stage in a very, very big way. And it means that things will be changing for sure. Okay, so let's arm ourselves and let's prepare ourselves and educate ourselves about that. So in any case, Doug will be back with us on Friday. He was going to come back today, but we're going to continue the conversation. Fascinating discussion with him. If you missed it last Friday, you can go, by the way, to the GCN website, www.gcnlive.com. And there's links to all the programs there. If you go, there's a little list, a drop-down list, and you can find INN World Report. If you click on that, it takes you to our page, and there's a link there to all the previous shows, the archives. So if you are interested in any of the things that we've had on the air before, you can go there and find out. Meanwhile, while I'm waiting for somebody to call, somebody give me a ring, 866-582-9933. You get a book right off the bat, a brand-new book. Happy to give it out. From Wayne Madsen, who, by the way, we've had a little trouble reaching Wayne, but we're going to get him on the show, too, to talk about this book. He's written another one, too, very interesting book. 866, toll-free, 866-582-9933. Give me a ring. In the meanwhile, while I'm waiting for that, a story that really caught my eye. In fact, we're going to have these folks on to talk about this from the Labor Committee, the National Labor Committee. And actually, I think I found this site, this story originally, I think, on Alex Jones's site. Very, very interesting story that he had put up there. Certainly caught my eye. And it was very timely because of the Super Bowl. And the National Labor Committee chose to put up on their website this story right at the time of the Super Bowl. Basically, it's all about women in Salvador who are sewing these NFL jerseys that are on sale here in the United States. They go for $80, okay, Peyton Manning jerseys for $80. Anybody care to guess what these women are paid to create these? All right, so they work their heads off in very, very difficult circumstances, and they get paid something like, I think, 9 cents or something per shirt that they make. They make about nine of them an hour or something like that, 10 cents a shirt maybe. That's pretty amazing figure, I think. If they're making nine of these an hour and they're getting you know, maybe 90 cents out of the deal. And, geez, it's like $700 worth of shirts, and they're getting 90 cents. In any case, that's the kind of situation that apparently still exists, and I guess the NFL doesn't have a problem with that. Should we have a problem with that? Or should we say, gee, you know, Americans used to make these shirts for a lot more money, more power to the NFL and more power to the corporations that they can make so much money now on these items. It's just the American way. That's great. Meanwhile, we're paying. If you want one of these things and you're coughing up $80 for it, and the woman who put it together made something like 9-10 cents on the deal, and you know, whatever the cost of materials and so forth. So somebody's getting an awful lot of money. That's a heck of a profit margin. These are jobs, obviously, that used to be done here, and I guess they've been pushed all around the world and to find where the lowest costs are. And then the Super Bowl, also last night. But in the meanwhile, let me give out the phone number again, 866-582-9933. Give me a ring, and you'll get a book for sure. The Super Bowl, if it was obviously a very interesting game last night, a very good game. One of the and a surprising game. I liked there was a lot of risk taken. Not a typical Super Bowl game by any means, but I was really fascinated to see the halftime show. That's something that when I do watch the Super Bowl, it's not something that I watch usually, the halftime show. But I was in a place that had it on, and it was right in front of me and everything. And who comes out but the Who? Or what's left of the Who? Roger Daltrey and Peter Townsend, original guitar player and singer from the Who, of course, the first band member to pass away, I think it was 1978, was Keith Moon, the frenetic drummer, very, very original style on drum playing, but also a very wild, shall we say, individual. His nickname was Moon the Loon. And he died in, I think it was about 1978. And then more recently, John Entwistle, the bass player, passed away a few years ago while the band was on tour in Las Vegas. But I thought it was very interesting, friends, to see in the heart of American martial culture, shall we say, at the Super Bowl, the Who singing "Won't Get Fooled Again," which the lyrics, I don't know what they meant to Pete Townsend when he wrote them, but it's all about revolution and fighting in the streets. And the new regime that takes over is no different, really, than the old regime. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, right there at the Super Bowl. I wonder if he was talking about Barack Obama when he wrote that. Anyhow, we'll be right back with Carol Hardigay after this. We're going to talk about POWs and MIAs, an issue that is certainly not resolved yet.
America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. Thank you. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified neocon free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to innworldreport.net.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. Monday through Friday now, right here on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time, where we bring you, the people here at INN bring you what we like to say is the news the networks won't tell you. And we certainly have a story that we're going to talk about this afternoon, which is a story that the networks and so many other news outlets have shied away from. And I think it's very, very important that the families that have been through this experience remain in our consciousness and don't just recede into the background, because they've paid the ultimate price in many respects, that their loved ones have gone in the defense of this country, or at least that's what they believe they were doing. And certainly for that, they deserve a much better set of circumstances and treatment than they're getting. So in the spirit of that, I'd like to welcome to the program for the first time Carol Herdlicker, whose husband, Colonel David L. Herdlicker, was shot down over Laos on May 18th, 1965. And it appears that there's a very likely chance that he is still there, left behind by the government of the United States. Carol, welcome to INN World Report Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Tom. I'm always delighted to get the information out that the normal media won't handle.
Well, we feel that that's why we got into media, to provide a venue for lots of stories, and particularly stories like yours, which it must be very, very frustrating, Carol, to know that your government is just brushing you aside and using its full weight against you to marginalize you. Why don't you tell our audience how you got to this point? I'm sure it wasn't always that way for you.
Oh, no. In the beginning, I was a true believer and very patriotic, and I believed that the United States government would always tell me the truth. You know, when they sent my husband off into harm's way, never in my wildest dreams would I believe that they would have left him in captivity. You know, we all knew that there's a possibility you could get killed and captured and what have you, but we believed that when you were captured, that our government would do everything they could to get you out. But as the years went by, I became painfully aware not only had they not made the effort, they had purposely set about to cover up the fact that they left men in captivity. And during 1992, when they had the Senate Select Committee hearings, we had former secretaries of defense that testified to the fact they knew men were in captivity when we left. And when Nixon said in 1973 all the POWs were home, that was the coffin or the nail in the coffin for the men that were left in captivity, because then it was all set about to keep the lid on it and to not get them out, not return them.
Now, the circumstances around which this has all taken place are a little bit complicated, right? I know that, look, from the point of view of the Vietnamese, we came over there and pounded them up pretty good. I guess the Laotians maybe feel the same way, to an extent, perhaps the Cambodians. And I'm sure they would have liked to have had some sort of Marshall Plan or something like that that went, you know, we certainly rebuilt Germany and Japan after the war, and we won that war, you know, so... I imagine that they were looking for some sort of cooperation with the United States and felt, maybe erroneously, that as part of that give and take that should take place, that the POWs should factor into that. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, that's a very correct statement, because that's basically what happened, is that Nixon sent a secret letter to Lee Dok To telling him that they would pay for repatriations and for rebuilding their country and everything. But the Laotian story is a little different story. They were a secret war. They were pounded by our bombs and everything, and they were like the stepchild. They've just been left out there on their own. And the United States government has never stepped forward and made the effort to help them. But in all the documents that I've been able to find on the issue, is that that's basically what it states in there, that the Laotians say no POWs will be returned until we receive payment, humanitarian aid, and whatever.
And
so that was in place.
And for what? And that obviously hasn't taken place.
No,
any idea why the United States wouldn't want to do that with Laos?
Well, what I would say, in the beginning, you have Kissinger that basically did not include the Laotians in the Paris Peace Accords, and the Laotians said that they would not release their POWs through Vietnam. And so Kissinger basically snubbed them and basically told Lee Dok To, don't worry about it, we'll cover that. We'll just say that these nine that we brought out came from Laos. And so that's what they did. And so basically you can put the whole blame on Kissinger for not sticking to his guns and getting those men out.
I guess he had other fish to fry.
Oh,
then this story gets even worse with the introduction of the unlikely couple of John McCain and Bob Kerry.
John
Kerry. yeah, Bob Kerry, he's right here in New York, too, and he has an interesting history in Vietnam himself. But in any case, Kerry and McCain, and they get involved, and then I guess after Nixon sort of recedes from the scene, these two guys step in. Why don't you tell everybody your experience with that situation?
Well, basically what happened there is that Kerry had an opportunity to really resolve this issue and bring these men home. And when he started into the Senate Select Committee hearings, it looked like he was going to really be diligent and get to the bottom of the story. And you can see as the hearings went on, he was like, uh-oh. And so then he turned. I actually sat there and watched him start changing his attitude to where we need to not have anybody alive. We need to have evidence that they're not alive. There was a lot of skullduggery that went on behind the scenes of the Senate Select Committee hearings. And then you have McCain that sat at his left hand, and every chance they got, you know, they torpedoed. They never even went into Laos. They didn't even go into investigating any of the satellite imagery or anything. They got on the fast track of they wanted to shut this down, and that's basically what they did. They shut it down before they got all the information. And then Kerry himself lied to me personally, because he told me that they would follow up on things that we had put into the record. And the minute that committee came to an end, I couldn't get Kerry on the phone or nothing. That was it. They were done with it. And they buried the POWs again. Instead of having the moral fortitude to stand up and say, gee, a mistake was made here, we need to correct this mistake and sit down and figure out a way that both sides could save face, because that's what it's about. You have all these egos of these people at the top that can't say they made a mistake. Okay, well, there are ways around that, and they could have gathered enough people to put an investigation together to solve it.
Well, Carol, you certainly sound like you're more than magnanimous enough to meet people like that halfway. Why don't we continue with this? We're speaking with Carol Herdlicker about her family situation involving her former husband, who was shot down over Laos in 1965. We'll be right back after this.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network. We'll be right back.
right, good friends. Welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio here on the Great GCN Radio Network. 5 days a week, Monday through Friday from 5 until 6 p.m. 5 until 6 p.m. Eastern Time. For those of you in the Central Time Zone, that would be 4 until 5 p.m. And a little bit of a somber program today. But at the same time, friends, I'm buoyed by the spirit of our guest, Carol Herdlicker, whose husband, Colonel David L. Herdlicker, was shot down in Laos in 1965. And Carol was telling us that at first she just believed the government's story about what was going on and then began to have some serious doubts. And it turned her into a bit of an activist. Carol, before we go any further, you know, I'm always having an interesting time speaking with you folks, the guests. And it gets to be the end of the show, and I haven't asked you to tell everyone where they can go to find out more information. So why don't we do that now before we continue?
Okay, that'd be great. I have a web page for my husband, and it's at www.powherdlicka, and it's spelled HRDLICKA.com. And what I've done is I've put up documents to show the public, if they want to really find out what the true story is, they can go up there and see the government's own documents backing up that they left men behind. And the other thing to point out is that for 37 years, we have asked for documentation, and they will not give it to us. And they keep telling us they're going to declassify these documents, and they don't do it. Now, the question is, if the United States government did not leave men and there's nothing to hide, then declassify the documents. Because I guarantee you, from the few that I have, it shows that they have a wealth of information on these men and that they tracked them. And they were tracking them in the 80s, and they're tracking them to today, and they know exactly where they are.
That's very very disheartening. What's the website again?
It's www.powherdlicka, HRDLICKA.com. And there is all kinds of information up there, just a few documents. I've just managed to put a few up there, but I have boxes and boxes of them here.
Well, we have POW MIA families on from time to time to keep the information in front of the American public. And, you know, a few times back, John McCain was running for president, and several people, even people who worked in the Hanoi office trying to get this repatriation going, had a lot of poor marks for John McCain. Let's put it like that.
Right.
Have you had experience with John McCain with this issue?
Well, yes, we've tried to get legislation through, and every time we try to get legislation through that will help the POWs and help the future generations. That's the worst of it. Help the future generations not to be caught in this same quagmire. McCain is the one that always torpedoes our legislation. He's always there to block us on anything we try to get done. And so my question would be, you know, if he was still a POW, wouldn't he want his family trying to get him out? And I do not understand, never have understood, why that man will not help us. And instead, he blocks us at everything. But it's been going on since the 80s when he testified, or he had a, when he was a congressman, he was sitting before one of the committees, and they had General Tai, who at the time was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And so McCain asked him, he said, well, why do you believe men are still there? Now, this is in the 80s. And General Tai said to him, because of the wealth of information that's coming across my desk showing live men.
What's the nature, before we go continue with John McCain, because there's an awful lot there. I've had POW, MIA, people on before that have some very powerful things, let's just say, to say about John McCain. Can you tell us the nature of the material, the wealth of material, at least the parts that you've become aware of? What is it like? What's the quality of the information? What is it to describe?
You mean as to the reports about the live men?
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm still getting them. Some of them up on my webpage in the 2009 bracket. They're still getting them. And it's basically what I found out they do. The reason they don't ever put a name on these reports, what the report will say is, like in 1984, the report said there are 20 American POWs, and this is Laos. They're going to move them from point A to point B. You follow them and see where they're taking them, so they'll know where they are then. And the reason that they don't put down John, James, and so on, is because under the law, they would have to tell me that they got my husband's name on a report, is supposedly what they do. But that's not the case either, because I found reports that have my husband's name on it that they'd never given me, even though I have filed a Freedom of Information. And then you go on through the, up into the 90s and so on, there's still live sighting reports. And in the mid-90s, we actually had a letter from one of the men that actually asked to be brought home. He said that he was Major so-and-so, that he was married to a Lao woman, had Lao children, but he would like to come home. That was the mid-90s. And it just keeps progressing like that, and I just feel that it's such a shame that these guys over there are asking to come home, and our government does nothing but torpedo all of the people that bring the information forward.
And let's face it, at the end of the Vietnam War, that the POWs were a bit of a bargaining chip, I think, right, for places.
They're still a bargaining chip. Basically, what they are now is blackmail material, because what happens is, if you look over the issue, during the 90s, there was a big scurry of information came out about possible POWs still being over there. Well, that's what the Vietnamese do. When they ask the government, the United States government, to give them something, and then the United States government didn't give it to them, then they would leak this POW stuff out, and there'd be a big flurry. Then the next thing you know, Vietnam got what they wanted. Then the POW thing would shut down again, and you wouldn't hear any more until they wanted something else. So what it is it's blackmail material now, because they, every time they ask for something and the United States government doesn't give it to them, then they threaten to turn a POW loose.
And that is that has been a concern for a lot of the people in the POW-MIA movement about John McCain himself, that he spent so much time there in captivity under, let's just say, different circumstances than a normal prisoner, and that opens the door to, you know, who knows what took place behind closed doors, and that perhaps it explains John McCain's very strange behavior when it comes to the POW-MIA issue. Can you tell us about your experience with John McCain's behavior on this issue?
Sure, but basically what I will say on that point is that the Vietnamese documented everything on the POW, so I guarantee you they have a cache of information on John McCain, which they will use to blackmail him to do whatever they want. And my personal contact with Mr. McCain was time and time again up there in Washington, and we were working on this Missing Persons Act and trying to put legislation into place to protect future generations from having to go through this, and making these agencies in the government give us the information. So we worked for a whole year faxing and getting this legislation put into being, and it was in effect from February through August. And McCain got in there in the middle of the summer and got it gutted. And we, as some family members, went to meet with him in the hallway, and when he realized who we were, he got really angry. He shoved this lady aside, knocked another one into the wall, and down the hallway he goes. And so I was following down the hallway, and I just told him, I said, Senator McCain, we just want you to leave the Missing Persons Act alone. He says, I don't know anything about a Missing Persons Act, which is a total lie. He did.
Well, we're speaking with Carol Herdlicker, friends. Her husband was shot down over Laos in 1965, a patriotic military wife who then had a rude awakening, it seems, when she began to get reports that conflicted with what the government's version was. We'll be back with Carol just after these messages.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
right, good friends, welcome back. Coming down the home stretch here. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. Carol, do you mind taking a phone call if anybody would like to say hi to you? Okay.
I'd love to take them.
All right, let's open the phone lines for the balance of the segment here, folks. If you'd like to speak with Carol Herdlicker about her family's experience and her experience with the POW-MIA issue, please give us a ring right now, 866-582-9933. In addition to speaking with Carol and asking maybe a question or giving her some support, I'll be happy to send you off a book as well, Wayne Madsen's book, Jaded Tasks. So you can do that, 866-582-9933. Carol, there is, let's finish quickly with John McCain. Now, a lot of the POW-MIA activists that I've spoken with, and these are family members, these are people who used to work in the government who were in charge of getting this issue resolved. A lot of people feel like, that he made a deal with the Vietnamese to close the books on the POW-MIA issue and not for them not to release any more information. And in exchange for that, he was going to make sure that they got the most favored nation trading status. Have you heard that before?
Well, I think it's a little more than that. I think basically what it is he's basically owned by the Vietnamese, because any time you're in captivity, you become a Stockholm syndrome type thing. And so he has a place, shall I say, in his heart for them, first of all. And the second of all, that as I saw him work through the halls of Congress, he would take a trip to Vietnam, and when he'd come back from Vietnam, he would actually be lobbying for the Vietnamese. And I know that in the 1990s, Kerry was working for normalizing relations. So that was the thing with the Senate Select Committee hearing, was to put the POW issue to bed so they could forge ahead with opening the doors of the trade to Vietnam. And that's the reason they had the Senate Select Committee hearings.
Now, Carol, you're somebody who's firsthand seen the government from both sides, okay? When you were younger, you say yourself that you were a very patriotic military family and so forth. You believed everything the government said.
Yep.
And then you began to have your doubts. Then you got into it and you educated yourself with information that the government had that they weren't releasing. Maybe you got it through Freedom of Information. Maybe people leaked it to you. Now, what's your opinion about the way our government functions and how honest it is with the citizens about all manner of issues?
Well, I just don't believe it's forthright on any issue. Their first thought is deny. That's their first thought. And then their second thought is cover, your rear end, and tell the public only what you think they need to know. They're not going to tell you the truth. And that's just a fact. And I find it despicable, and I understand that if you're in a negotiation, you don't talk about it because you don't want the opposition having your side and stuff like that. But there are some things they should come out. For instance, like in the Afghan war when they got Tillman got killed, they should have come right out and told the family right off the bat that it was friendly fire that had done it. But what was their first thought? Nope. Lie. Their first thought, they lied for months, and then they finally owned up to it, which is more than they've done with the Vietnam War. They have never owned up to leaving the men, even though we had information from the Secretaries of Defense that show that, and it's in the record. At least they did it during the Afghan War. But they still, their first thought on anything is lie, and then their next thought is, okay, how can we resolve this? How can we keep this quiet?
And, I don't think they did it out of the goodness of their heart with Pat Tillman's case either.
I think the
truth started to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's it. And
you know, Carol, there's a story we've been following here on INN. There were three detainees down at Guantanamo Bay prison down there that we've got set up. Mm-hmm. And three young men, they were due to go home. They never got charged with anything. They were basically sold into the government's hands on a bounty program that they were just trying to get anybody they could. These guys were due to go home, and we are told that the three of them all hung themselves on the same night in June of 2006. And the government story just stunk to high heaven, and there's some law students at Seton Hall University that started looking into it. There's an attorney that's on this program often, Scott Horton, looking into it. And they're picking the government story apart, and it just looks like they were just plain killed. And
right.
They had rags stuffed down their throats. They had supposedly tied their own hands first and all this stuff. And it's the same thing what you're saying. The government's just lying and lying and lying, it looks like. And then it's like they won't tell you the house is on fire unless you ask. You
right,
know?
Right. And they won't own up to it until they get in the corner and they have to. And that's the sad part. And the thing is that I understand that people make mistakes, but the thing is you have to understand the mindset in Washington is they don't make mistakes. So they're not going to own up to any mistakes.
Now, what can you tell the next generation of activists, Carol? You've been at it for quite some time now. What do young people need to know about how we need to do what we can to try to change things in Washington?
Well, the way I look at it is you have to ask for the truth, but you're not always going to get it. And Obama said transparency, and if he's able to put that into effect, that would be absolutely awesome because they have classified documents that don't need to be classified. And the thing is, though, that you have to understand it's not just Obama. You have people all over Washington that do not want secrets out. And they will do everything in their power to keep them in. And that's just like McCain. He will do everything in his power to see that none of these POW documents ever see the light of day. And that is the problem. And I don't know how us as individuals fight the big power machine. Except, you know, I mean, I keep pecking at the wall, and that's about all you can do. And you can hope as you go along that you'll run into somebody that has the moral fortitude to help you. But there are few and far between of those.
You know, John Kerry started out as an idealistic young man. He came back from Vietnam, and he got involved with Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And I think, he really did try to change things when he got to Washington. You know, he was on some different committees where they were finding out after Watergate about all these government abuses and everything. You had an opportunity to observe John Kerry in action on this issue. Why don't you tell us what you saw?
Well, basically, on my issue, he did the same kind of a thing. He wanted normalization relations with Vietnam, and in the minute that he saw that the information that was coming into that select committee was not going to back up the fact that all the men were dead, then he shifted gears, and the gear was to put it to bed, to put the lie to it, shut it down, and so he could get normalization pushed through. And basically what happens is when those guys go to Washington, they sell their soul. And that is it, and that's what we're fighting. If we could get everybody out of office and start over with a clean group, and then we could get something done. But when you send a young man up there, he's going to go into the same old machine, the same old guys that have been there for 20, 30 years are going to break him and whip him into shape to vote their way. And, you know, they won't vote what's good for the country. They vote for what's good for their pocketbook. And that's the problem, and I don't know how the American people are going to stop it unless they start voting these people out of office.
And what do you feel? I mean, what about the two-party politics that we have in this country? Are you satisfied with that, or do you think that we're not going to be able to get this thing straight if we're just going to rely on these same two broken-down parties?
Well, you can't, because the two broken-down parties are the problem. They get in there, and they get gridlocked. What you need is a third tiebreaker, I guess, and we just need some, like it used to be, we need to go back to when people actually went to Washington to be representative of their area. That's what we need. We don't need people up there that's already been fought.
Well, Carol, I want to thank you for joining us today, and listen, we will endeavor to check back with you from time to time, because this is something that people need to know about. And we don't want to let this fade from our memory. That certainly was not your husband's idea when he volunteered to defend this country. I'm sure that's the last thing on his mind. But I think it's terrible the way this country's turned its back on them and on you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, well, you keep up the good spirit, and we'll be back in touch with you. Thank you very much for that website as well.
Okay.
I'll be talking about it on the air. Thank you, Carol. All right, friends, that wraps it up for another edition of INN World Report Radio. It's just another subject, friends, that we need to keep in mind. Here is a woman who knew about government betrayal for a very long time, and it turned her around, too. We'll see you again tomorrow, friend.